From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving filled with faith, food, family, and football. For those of us in Chicago, you can leave the football part out. That wasn't so great, but the rest of it was a wonderful celebration, and I hope it was for you as well. We've got a great show ahead for you today. We're going to be talking about Venerable Fulton Sheen, whose death anniversary is right around the corner. We'll be talking with Dan Cheeley, a church historian, about that media bishop who has so inspired the United States and the world. Later in the show, we'll be talking with Julia Lineberg about Our Lady of Loretto. We talk about this in various ways, about various devotions to Mary and that incredible series of events that happened related to Our Lady of Loretto. We'll talk to Julia about what's believable, and we'll tie that in a little bit to my television series on EWTN, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, where I look at the story behind that great devotion. Later in the show, we'll be talking about They Might Be Saints, and for this week on They Might Be Saints, on Wednesday, December 12th, or 11th, excuse me, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, the episode of Father Augustus Tolton airs. And I examine the sainthood cause of the first black priest in American history, Venerable Augustus Tolton, who overcame tremendous challenges both inside and outside of the Catholic Church. So check that one out on Wednesday, December 11th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. That's They Might Be Saints, Father Augustus Tolton. In my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, I talk about my favorite Marian devotion, and that is Our Lady of Guadalupe. And that is the most visited Marian shrine in the world, is at in Mexico City there, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I go there to investigate how the mysterious image emblazoned on St. Juan Diego's tilma has inspired millions of believers. So check that one out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter this week. And those programs air every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Later in the show, we're going to be taking a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day for today, December 7th. We've got Blessed Humbert of Clairvaux, and the 365 Days with Mary project for today is Our Lady of Sorrows via Tuelda in Spain in the 16th century. The question of the week, what is that second Frassati miracle? Let's see if I can answer that one. And the miracle of the day is the Battle of Empel in the year 1585. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And of course, we had the Carlo Acutis news that from last week where we learned about the canonization date for that future saint. And of course, the other Italian to be canonized in 2025 is Pier Giorgio Frassati. And the second miracle attributed to him was officially recognized. And Pope Francis had already announced during last week's general audience that the young Italian blessed would be canonized during that 2025 Jubilee. And so during the general audience on November 20th, Pope Francis had announced that Frassati would be canonized during the Jubilee of Youth, which we see takes place from July 28th to August 3rd of next year. Now, at the time of the decree, the decree had not been published, attributing a second miracle to the young man's intercession, which is the Church's condition for a blessed person to be advanced forward and recognized as a saint. And Frassati was beatified by JP II in 1990 after that first miracle was recognized. But on November 24th, during the Sunday Angelus, Pope Francis explained that he had previously announced Frassati's canonization, as he had been informed by the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints that his cause was about to be successfully concluded. And he also specified the exact day of the event, August 3rd, 2025. And today, in fact, or that day, he met privately with Cardinal Semeraro, and the pontiff authorized the publication of a decree officially attributing a second miracle to Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. Now, the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints has not yet given any details explaining what kind of miracle it was. Stay tuned to this program for that. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. The prize is the image of the faces of Mary. And so last week we were talking about two future American saints. That was quite a thing to have two vice postulators of the two new American sainthood causes on the same show. Check that one out if you go to ewtn.com/radio. You can listen to the audio archive to learn about the brand new future two saints in America. And so, but the question from last week was related, and that was, who was the last American to be canonized? And writing in with that correct answer was Mary K. Cloyser. And she said that the last American saint to be canonized was Junipero Serra on September 23rd, 2015. Maybe we'll be having some new saints coming out sometime soon, but that is correct. That is Junipero Serra is the latest American saint. And thanks for writing in with that question, or for that answer. Now, for this week, we're talking about the Litany of Laredo. And on June 20th, 2020, during the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Pope Francis added three invocations. To win the prize, name any of those three that were added by Pope Francis. And again, in 2020, during the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Pope Francis added three titles to the Litany of Laredo. To win the prize, you have to name one of those three. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Julia Lineberg about Our Lady of Laredo, whose feast day is right around the corner. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this program, this radio show, know that I also do a television show on EWTN Television, and that's called Explore with the Miracle Hunter. And coming up this week is an episode of Our Lady of Laredo. Many people know about the Litany of Laredo, and of course that name stems from the devotion to Our Lady of Laredo, the according to pious tradition, the house that flew with the guidance of angels and ended up in Laredo in Italy. And so what's fascinating about this is that, of course, we don't see angels carrying houses in our modern day, and of course we might want to chalk it up to pious legend and say, that's something that people believed way back when there was no sophistication to it. But is there some possibility with some scientific research that there is something to that legend? Well, we're so excited today to talk with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimage, who's taken people many times to the Shrine of Our Lady of Laredo. And she's here with us today to tell us about the fascinating devotion. Thanks so much for being with us again, Julia.
Oh, good morning, Michael, and thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I love Our Lady of Laredo, as you know. So thank you for having me for this episode.
Absolutely. It's so fascinating. I think that it was a fun episode to create for EWTN Television. And I think it's something every year we try to remember it. And I think people who fly on airplanes might do a quick blessing before they fly. They pray to Our Lady of Laredo for a safe flight. And I know that even in the Chicago airport that I fly out of, they have a Laredo chapel in the airport. So she still has a devotion that's alive and well. Now, before we get too far with it, let's trace back the origins of the title of Our Lady of Laredo. Where does this devotion come from?
Well, the house is itself the house in which the Holy Family lived, but more importantly, it is the house where the Word was made flesh. It is the house where the angel Gabriel appeared to Our Blessed Lady and announced that she was chosen to be the Mother of God. And in the prayer to Our Lady of Laredo, it's so beautiful, it says, "By your fiat, the Savior of the world descended." And it was within those walls. So it happened that in the 13th century, there was a lot of turmoil in the Holy Land, and our Blessed Lady decided that her house was going to be preserved and removed. And it was under the power of the holy angels that the house was taken as, I think it was Pope John the 23rd said, it was taken from Palestine to Croatia, from Croatia to Loreto, where our Blessed Lady designated among the laurels that her house would be preserved for all of Christianity, for all of mankind.
Absolutely amazing. And they still celebrate this coming to Italy, don't they? Every year, La Venuta, they call it. There's some celebration that happens there in Italy, isn't there?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And we call it in the United States the Feast of Our Lady of Loreto on December the 10th. But actually, they in Italy celebrate La Venuta, which is the translocation of the house, on December the 10th. They begin on the vigil December the 9th with lighting a special star under the rotunda, and the vigil goes all night. And then the next day, they have a huge mass celebration there in the beautiful basilica for our Blessed Lady. And at one time, it was extended to all of Italy, but now they do it mostly right there in Loreto. And this is still very, very well attended, and everything is offered by the cardinal there. That is, his seat is Loreto.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. You can find out more about her at marianpilgrimages.com. And we're talking today about Our Lady of Loreto. And Julia, you know me, I'm a little bit annoying or interesting because I'm a skeptic and a believer. You know, I want to believe that, in fact, that this was carried by angels and transported in a miraculous way. But I'm also a skeptic, thinking maybe that's something from an earlier, more pious age where science wasn't really valued as much as it is in our modern day. Has there been any kind of research whatsoever that would suggest that this is actually the house of Mary?
Well, I too, I just believed because my mother told me it was. But then after that, I started to be a little skeptical as I grew and as I became older. And I thought, you know, let us see if there really is. So having had the privilege of staying in Loreto for an extended period of time, I was able to do some research. And then there was an American film crew that came over and they wanted to do a documentary, which they did, and I assisted with translations and so forth. But we became familiar with a professor, Giorgio Nicolini, who did a lot of scientific research there. And he said, for example, there was this belief that it was actually taken by ship, and the family name was Angeli, which means angels. Mm. So they're like, see, there was, you know, this was all a bunch of pious malarkey. So he did a little bit more research, this Professor Nicolini, and excavating underneath the Holy House, he found and proved and filmed that there was no foundation. In other words, the foundation that exists in Nazareth is still existing, and it meets and corresponds completely with the house that is in Loreto. And Professor Nicolini took a sheet of paper and put it underneath the Holy House, and he went around the walls in this tiny little cavern and filmed the fact that the house does not sit on any foundation, and you can actually put paper underneath the house and the ground where it landed. And the floor, which is inside the Holy House that we, the pious, would attend Mass upon, was put there later.
Fascinating.
It was put there later. Yes. And also, the stones, of course, are the same as the stones found in the Holy Land, but they're held together with mortar that can be found nowhere else. All of the scientific research was done on that mortar, and it too, again, preserved the fact that the house was never disassembled. And there was something that he also started to do research.
Oh, maybe let's revisit that point. I think that's an interesting point that you mentioned, is that we might say that, sure enough, it could be that the house had been disassembled by crusaders, perhaps, from the Holy Land, mm-hmm. and transported in pieces, and then painstakingly put back together with some mortar in Italy, and assembled, and the church built on top of that. But you're suggesting that the mortar that holds those stones together, which are from the Holy Land, and the mortar, which is from the Holy Land, shows no signs of being broken apart and assembled. It's all continuous. Is that correct?
That is correct. And scientific research done by Professor Nicolini and his team proved that the mortar not only came from the Holy Land, but it cannot be replicated by modern days, in modern times. In other words, he did his research in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, and it has not been able to be replicated. That is original mortar from the time of Christ.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. You can go to marianpilgrimages.com to find out more about her travels to places like Loreto. We're talking today about Our Lady of Loreto. And I've been fascinated by this story. Of course, we look at it sort of with a skeptical eye that perhaps this is pious tradition, that this house was transported by angels. Maybe it wasn't even the house of Mary, but there is some scientific research that suggests that not only is it perhaps originally the house of Mary, but also was transported in one piece, which would imply something other than taking apart and moving it by the family Angeli, which is the theory that's circulated today. Absolutely amazing. Well, Julia, when you look at this house, what strikes you as remarkable about the house of Loreto?
Well, I think about the fact that we are privileged to be able to enter there. And I think about the love that our mother has for us, our Heavenly Mother, that she has preserved this beautiful relic for us. And over the centuries since it was translocated there to Loreto, many saints have visited there physically and in by location. There were beautiful, beautiful stories of St. Veronica Giuliani going in by location, Catherine of Bologna, etc., from those days. But there were two wonderful accounts that stayed with me in my heart. One was Venerable Catherine Emmerich, and she actually, in her visions, saw the house being carried across the land and the sea, and she described it so perfectly that there were seven angels that transported it, three on either side of the abode, and out ahead was one angel with a ray of light from heaven that brought this house across the land and the sea. And I love reading the visions of Catherine Emmerich, because she was the one who was able to find the location or describe the location of Mary's home in Ephesus. So I also had the privilege of knowing one of the friars that was Padre Pio's companion and caretaker for more than 10 years. And I asked him, I said, "Oh, Padre Alessio," with Padre Alessio Parente, who is deceased now, but your listeners, I'm sure, would know him from the books that he's written, Send Me Your Guardian Angel, Padre Pio, and also About the Holy Souls in Purgatory, Viva right. Padre Pio. So I said, "Father Alessio, did you ever go to Loreto? Did Padre Pio ever go to Loreto?" And he said, "I have to tell you," he said, "I was taking Padre Pio from the church back to his cell, and Padre Pio was walking. This was in the very early 1960s, and Padre Pio was still walking, although slowly, as you know, on his wounded feet. And Father Alessio mentioned to him, 'Spiritual Father, do you know there is a pilgrimage being organized here in San Giovanni to go to Loreto to celebrate La Venuta?' And he said, 'Spiritual Father, why don't we go? That way you can offer Mass at the at the Holy House. And Padre Pio stopped, and he looked at Father Alessio, and he said, "My son, if ever I would go to offer the Mass in that Holy House, I would certainly die of infatuation." Now, I know in your wonderful documentary series, you did point out some of the relics that were in the Holy House, and one of them was a bowl from that the Holy Family used, and the other, the altar that is in there. Encased in that altar was the first altar that the apostles offered the Mass in Mary's home. And I kind of think that this beautiful privilege given to us in our day was emphasized by Padre Pio, that this was such a great privilege given to us by our Blessed Lady.
Absolutely amazing. We've been talking today with Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimage. This is about Our Lady of Loreto. And for people who go to the house of Our Lady of Loreto, it's a little bit of a Russian Matryoshka doll setup, in the sense that first you go in the outer basilica, perhaps, and then there's a smaller church or house that's encased in marble, and then you go inside of that, and that's where that original house is. So it's an amazing thing to sort of peel away the layers and to get to that incredible house that some say, scientists amongst them, that this is actually the authentic house of the Virgin Mary. Well, we're so grateful to you, Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. Talk to us a little bit before we go about marianpilgrimages.com and how people can join you on trips to Italy to see amazing places like Our Lady of Loreto.
Well, we try and do our best to set up pilgrimages that have a theme, and there are so many beautiful pilgrimage sites in Italy, as you know, in all of Europe. But Loreto, Genizano, which is another fabulous show that you did, Our Lady of Good Counsel, these are Marian pilgrimage sites. We always go to San Giovanni Rotondo because of Padre Pio and our devotion to Padre Pio. And in that area is the site of the very first apparition of Our Lady in Italy, in Coronata. So we try and tie all of these beautiful Marian pilgrimage sites.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Julia Lineberg, for joining us today to talk about Our Lady of Loreto. And I encourage people interested in going to Loreto or visiting Italy with Julia to go check out Marian Pilgrimages, which is marianpilgrimages.com. Thank you so much for Julia for joining us on today's program.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Michael, as always. Thank you.
God bless. That was Julia Lineberg from Marian Pilgrimages. Check her out at marianpilgrimages.com. A fascinating, fascinating discussion about Our Lady of Loreto, whose feast day is upon us on December 10th. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be trying to answer that question of the week.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I think it's fun to hear what people are thinking about question-wise when it comes to miracles, and I try my best to give you a good answer. But I also love answering questions aside from the emails, answering them in person. So I travel around the country. I give probably 20 talks a year at different Catholic conferences or parishes or other events. And these days I've been talking about a lot about Eucharistic miracles, but talk about Marian apparitions and saints, of course. But I always leave it open for questions at the end of the evening. And we usually get some pretty interesting ones that roll in. So people who are interested in having me speak at their parish, you can go to miraclehunter.com and click on the contact tab, and you can send me a message that way. And I look forward to speaking in Boston coming soon at the beginning of next year. And so the question for this week was, what is that second Frassati miracle? That's from Jim. And of course, in recent weeks, we just got that news about Carlo Acutis being canonized in April, and Pier Giorgio Frassati will be later in the summer. So that announcement was made. But the question was, what about the miracle? The Dicastery for the Causes of Saints has not released any information on that. And I can say that I do know the miracle, and will be attempting to have that that priest, as it were, appear on our radio show and be the very first. I always like to try to be the first to interview these miracle recipients to see them tell their story. So it is a priest from the United States who had that Frassati miracle. And so I'll be working hard to bring you that story as soon as I can. So pray for that one, that we can get that one on the air soon. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Now let's take a look at 365 Days with Mary. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. And we all know Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, or Fatima, May 13th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion from all around the world that lines up exactly to each date of the calendar year. And so for today's date, December 7th, we've got Our Lady of Sorrows from Villatuelda in Spain in the 16th century. And the story goes that Villatuelda has two patrons, San Mames and Our Lady of Sorrows. The patronal feast of Our Lady of Sorrows occurs on December 7th, and it's celebrated with a procession, and the image of the Virgin is usually adorned with flowers, and pastries are made by devotees, usually fulfilling a promise of goodwill toward neighbors. And that is Our Lady of Sorrows, celebrated on today, December 7th, in Villatuelda in Spain in the 16th century. And for more information on 365 Days with Mary, you can go to the website, you can download the, you can get the book, or you can join the Facebook page, and any of the 10,000 other followers who get a Marian devotion of the day, and that's 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle happening at some point in Christian history that lines up exactly to the day's date. And the miracle associated with December 7th is the miracle that is said to have helped the Spanish troops win the Battle of Empel in 1585. And the miracle is attributed to the Immaculate Conception, which is the belief that Mary is preserved from original sin from the moment of her conception. And the miracle is said to have occurred on the night of December 7th, 1585, when Spanish troops were trapped by enemy forces at the Empel Dyke, and the troops were hungry and cold, and their morale was low, and the miracle is said to have helped the Spanish troops win the battle. And so that is today's miracle of the day, at the Battle of Empel in the year 1585. Let's take a look at the might be saints. We do this every week where we talk about people on the path to sainthood. And of course, that lines up to my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time on EWTN. And also my book called They Might Be Saints. You can find that one as well. If you go to EWTNRC.com, They Might Be Saints. I think it's my best book. And the news coming out, we always try to keep you up to date on the news of future saints coming down the pipeline. And this week we have a beatification of a jeweler with 11 kids and a shelter chaplain. And the Catholic Church has recognized the martyrdom that these two suffered during the religious persecutions unleashed in Spain in the tumultuous first half of the 20th century. And there's a quote from the Archbishop of Barcelona, that's Juan José Omella. He said, "We can add two more brothers to the list of those who faced religious persecution and death with courage and hope, forgiving their murderers. They acted like Christ on the cross," end quote. And the martyrdom of Gaeta and Antoni should help us face the crosses of each day with love, serenity, and hope, he said. and their beatification confirms their holiness and invites us to live the incarnate word in the world, the gospel of love, peace, fraternity, and forgiveness. And Cardinal O'Malley will preside over the celebration of the beatification with the prefect for the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, Cardinal Marcelo Semeraro, and Salvador Cristau, Bishop of Terrassa, the diocese to which the priest Gaeta belonged. And so we have two new martyrs added as saints in our Catholic Church. Absolutely amazing. Check that one out. TheyMightBeSaints.com for more information on this, or connect to the Facebook page of They Might Be Saints. And the Might Be Saint of the Day, we do this every week where we find somebody who's on the path to sainthood. We're talking about servants of God, blesseds, venerables, as they have feast days or death anniversaries that line up exactly to the day's date. And for today, December 7th, we have the memorial of Blessed Humbert, Humbert of Clairvaux. And the Benedictine monks at Chaise-Dieu, the monk at Clairvaux Abbey in 1117, he was the prior at Clairvaux, appointed by St. Bernard. He was the abbey at Igny in France in 1127, and he tried to return to Clairvaux but was ordered back to Igny by Bernard under the pain of monastic excommunication. Bernard delivered a touching homily at Humbert's funeral mass. And that is Blessed Humbert of Clairvaux, and he died in the year 1148. He's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for those interested in watching the television series They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, on the 11th of this month, we have They Might Be Saints Father Augustus Tolton. And I'll be examining the sainthood cause of the first black priest in American history, Venerable Augustus Tolton, who overcame tremendous challenges both inside and outside the Catholic Church. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with church historian Dan Chiuli about Venerable Fulton Sheen. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show and tune into my series on EWTN television, They Might Be Saints, know I love looking at the causes of potential American saints. And we have as many as 24 who have advanced to venerable and beyond in the United States. And one of those who is at venerable, but probably should be at blessed, is Fulton John Sheen. Of course, you know him as the bishop for his famous programs, Life is Worth Living, his two Emmy Awards, etc. He's perhaps the most famous media priest or bishop of all time. And for all of us in Catholic media, we have a debt of gratitude to pay to Fulton J. Sheen. And what's fascinating about his sainthood cause is he's the only person in the entire Catholic Church who has a miracle attributed to his intercession, who is not a blessed, who is marooned at venerable. And there's some interesting things going on right now where his cause is stalled. And we're so excited today to talk with Dan Chiuli, church historian and expert on Fulton Sheen, and about where his cause stands today and the impact of this great media bishop. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Michael, and it's even better to be able to talk about Fulton Sheen, my hero.
Yeah, I know. You refer to him as your hero, and growing up and beyond, you've really admired him. What was it about Fulton Sheen that sort of caught your attention?
Well, I'll never forget the first time I saw him on TV. I was a little shaver. I was about 6 or 7 years old, and his program was on at my grandparents' house, and everybody was watching him. And it was the days of black and white TV. And there was even coming through, okay, just seeing him, a little kid, I didn't understand what he was saying, but he just seemed to be so energized. His eyes were flashing. He was speaking with such earnestness that I said to myself, you know, I don't understand a word of what this priest is saying, okay? But I really want to know. He's very smart. And someday I'm gonna find out what he's saying. Someday I'm going to learn. And so I then was interested in him. My grandparents had a little abridged version of the life of Christ lying around their house. I started reading his stuff, and as I got older, I started reading as much of, and he wrote prodigiously. I mean, he wrote all kinds of books. And I started reading as many of them as I could get my hands on. That's a lot. And basically, he got me interested in the faith, not only on an intellectual basis, but also on a personal basis, because it was never just theory with him. It was always trying to link his listener up with Jesus Christ himself, trying to get the person to pray. He got me to pray to not only our Lord, but also to the Blessed Virgin. And, you know, once you start doing that, I mean, you know, Katie bar the door, you know, like once you open, as St. John Paul used to say, open wide the doors of your heart to Jesus Christ, you know, he comes in, and as only he can with his incarnate goodness. And I have to thank Fulton Sheen for getting me interested in that.
And you weren't the only one who was captivated by him. I mean, he was big time with radio shows and television shows and winning Emmy Awards, beating out Lucille Ball, for example, and being on the cover of Time magazine. Talk about the impact or the attraction that all of America, Catholics and non-Catholics, had to Fulton Sheen.
Well, this is an exciting and dynamic story. I remember that fortunately in my life, and pretty old now, I've been in the presence, even close enough to shake hands with with people who are on the altars already. Okay, I got to talk briefly with Mother Teresa, with Blessed Alvaro del Portillo, with Fulton Sheen a number of times. I was within 5 inches, half a foot of John Paul II, saw him operating at close range, and others. I mean, Mother Angelica, Alice von Hildebrand, John Harden, others. But they had tremendously different personalities. But there was one thing they all had in common. They were able, just by who they were, to communicate a spiritual energization. They had, like, for example, Fulton Sheen's personality is completely different than Blessed Alvaro del Portillo or the servant of God, John Harden. They were John Harden and Alvaro Portillo were quiet people, you know, reserved, almost private persons. Okay, where Sheen was a live wire. Okay, so totally different. But that same energization, it made you felt a kind of a happiness in their presence. You felt energized for God, and then you were able to communicate that in a spiritual way. It didn't really matter what they said, and that really was something else. Originally, when they gave Sheen his program, it was originally on ABC, it was a throwaway. They had, at that time, in that spot where he was, on CBS, I think, was Milton Berle, okay? And Milton Berle was known as Mr. Television. I mean, he was funny. I mean, he had all kinds of gags. He had an electric presence as well, okay, of a different kind. Funny as could be, zany, okay, and everybody was watching him. And everybody had to try to compete. The other big stations had to try to compete with Milton Berle. And so at NBC, they decided to put on the chairman of the board. They put Frank Sinatra on NBC. So you got Frank on NBC. Okay, you got Milty on CBS. So ABC said, there's no way we can compete with these guys. We're supposed to give a certain amount of time. It was the rules of the game at that time. It's no longer that way. But do some kind of public service TV, something that is just like a charitable thing. Let's put this guy, this Catholic bishop who had a popular radio program, he's asked for something. Let's put him on. It's a throwaway. Okay, but it doesn't matter because we're losing anyway. We can't beat out Milton Berle. We certainly can't beat out Milton Berle, Frank Sinatra combined. Well, guess what? Uncle Fulty, okay, they call him Uncle Fulty because he used to call Milton Burr Uncle Milty, beat out both of them. Wow. He had higher ratings than both of them. He had an audience composed not just the Catholics. Catholics were only about a quarter of the population of the United States at the time. You know, all kinds of people were watching, Jews, Catholics, Protestants, nothing. You know, and he was pretty electrified. He was that for years.
That is amazing. And I think when we see canonizations, of course, we see the canonizations of people who perhaps are known to the world, and there are, of course, those who are completely unknown, the Fatima children, for example. But beyond the television personality, besides all the acclaim and attention and media work, what were the heroic virtues of Fulton J. Sheen?
Well, he had a tremendous talent, okay, but he also had a tremendous capacity for work. And actually, interesting enough, as politically incorrect as it sounds today, for purity, okay. And let me give you an example of that. He was associated with all kinds of famous and beautiful people in Hollywood, because what happened often was, and that was the beginning of his close friendship with Claire Booth Luce, people would refer others to him. They'd say, hey, I met, first it was Monsignor Sheen, and he's really a gifted person. He can really counsel. Can you, I think you should meet him too. And by Claire Booth Luce, for example, who was probably one of the most famous American women in the country at the time. You know, she was a congresswoman. She was an authoress. She was beautiful. She was married to Henry Luce, one of the richest men in the United States. She had it all. Okay. But she lost her daughter, her oldest daughter, in a tragic car accident and basically went into a horrible depression. And I think it was Anne Blythe, the movie star Anne Blythe, told her, you should talk to Fulton Sheen. And she said, I don't believe in that nonsense. I don't think. That's not, what is he going to do for me? Bring her back? No, I don't need pie in the sky. Okay, she's a bitter person. But she said, what do you have to lose? Go talk to him. Well, to make a wonderful long story short, and I'd love to tell you the whole story of that sometime, but after meeting Fulton Sheen, it wasn't overnight, by the way, either. It was several meetings. She converts to Catholicism and becomes a Catholic for the rest of her life. And also two people who knew her, that her personality dramatically changed. I mean, she had been basically dog-eat-dog type person, you know, look out for number one. And there was a whole new dimension of charity, and therefore friendships and tenderness that were present in Claire Booth Luce post her contact with Fulton Sheen and the Catholic Church than she had beforehand. So it's that those stories can be multiplied by the dozens. Another time, he was asked to come to Peoria, where he's buried now, thank God. And he it was celebrating his anniversary as of his ordination, and so there's a big crowd there. And Archbishop Sheen at this point asked the pastor of the church, the first church where he had been assigned to, because I see a woman in this crowd. She's got a sad face. Do you know her? And they said, I've never seen her before. Archbishop, I don't know who she is. I want to talk to her. Bring her over here. Well, it turned out somehow in this crowd of hundreds of people, he saw a woman who was deeply in need, okay? And he talked with her for about 15 minutes, and the woman had not converted to Catholicism. She had had all kinds of personal problems. She met with her for 20 minutes, and then he introduced her to the pastor. The pastor took care of her, and for her, the rest is personal history. I mean, it's just, I used to joke, and this was almost completely true. If you were riding on a plane, and he never rode on first class, you know, he liked to ride, you know, with the regular people. If you were sitting next to Fulton Sheen on a ride from New York to Chicago, if you weren't a Catholic, you'd get interested by the time you hit Chicago. And if you were a Catholic, you're probably going to go to confession before you hit Chicago.
Oh,
because he was really amazingly apostolic. He firmly believed in the wisdom and the truth of Christ and the Catholic Church. And he was able to communicate that with great gusto and great effectiveness.
Amazing. We're talking today with Dan Cheeley about Fulton J. Sheen, the venerable bishop who's on the path to sainthood. And speaking of the sainthood of Fulton J. Sheen, his canonization cause opened in 2002, and Pope Benedict recognized his heroic virtue in 2012. And then after that, you need a miracle to advance on to the status of blessed. And we all know that in 2019, Pope Francis approved a miracle for James Fulton Engstrom, a boy who was born without breath, with the inability to take oxygen for 61 minutes, as maybe it was, and he came back to life. And that is the miracle that has been used, that will be used towards his beatification. But his beatification was postponed. I had a ticket to go. I was planning to go. I had a ride to go to that beatification.
Hey, we were going
to
go together.
We were going to go together, Dan. And that was in Illinois, of course. We're both Illinois guys. So we were going to go attend that. And it got postponed or canceled. And of course, his sainthood cause has been tricky all the way up to that point anyway, with his relics being in New York or Peoria and the whole dispute over that. What's going on right now, Dan, as far as his canonization cause goes?
Because he was a single-minded person, okay, he made a lot of enemies. Okay, people were jealous of him. He was not a compromiser, okay, and he got into a humongous dispute with Cardinal Spellman. To make a long story short, had been kind of commissioned. He was the head of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith in the United States. And in the post-war era, where Europe and Asia were all completely torn apart, America was trying to figure out how can we best funnel foreign aid to these destroyed countries and make it count, where it's not going to go into somebody's pocket. And they thought, well, let's do it to the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is everywhere. They got churches and monks, nuns who can pass this stuff out. And let's go with them. So Sheen ended up in charge of that, those mechanics. And as he's going through the books, he finds money missing. What the heck? There's money that came in. It's not accounted for and going out. So he can't figure this out. So he asked Spellman, what's the story? I can't understand. We got an X amount and X minus something, is not accounted for. Spellman says to him, well, we're taking that, okay? Because, hey, we're deliberately distributing this stuff. I mean, I think we got a right to have a little bit of a carrying charge. And she tells him, no, you can't. It's not our money. Oh, no, you don't understand, young man. This is the way the world works. I mean, they expect us to do it. What? Put it out in the open, then. Why can't you do that? And he's, it's not that'll cause too much trouble. Listen, you got a big future ahead of you, okay? Don't muff it, okay? Trust me on this. And she says, we can't, Your Eminence. It's not our money. He takes it all the way to the Pope. Pope Pius XII. Pope Pius XII backs Sheen is right. Spellman was embarrassed. Spellman became Sheen's inveterate enemy, at that point. And one of the things that Spellman did was he hired investigators to tail Sheen. He said, look, this guy is playing, he's got these starlets and everything that he converted in Hollywood, Virginia Mayo and others. Something funny might be going on. I want you to follow him and I want you to get the goods on him. Well, they follow him for 2 years, and they come back and they tell Spellman, we can't get anything out of this guy. Every time he's with a woman, there's someone else there. He's never alone with him. Okay, the only time he's alone is when every day he spends an hour before the Blessed Sacrament in prayer, no matter what town or country he's in. He gets other people to be in church to pray by themselves and stuff too.
He's as clean as a whistle. We can't find anything on him. Okay, so he said, okay, I guess we got to drop so much for that. But this is what kind of a guy he was. He was what we call the real McCoy. I mean, the whole thing. He wasn't going to water down the medicine. He was going to give it to you straight, okay? And giving it to people straight, it was powerful. He converted a lot of people, and he still converts people today. I run into people who were way younger than I am, who picked up books from Fulton Sheen and all of a sudden got interested in Catholicism. I mean, he writes in a different style than we have today. His style is nothing like mine. Okay, I've got this kind of down-home Chicago, blue-collar style. This guy, had a much more elegant, Thomistic, style. But he knew he was very much culturally enriched. He could quote literature. He could quote the arts. He knew the news like the back of his hand. He was he was definitely a Renaissance man in the best sense of the word, and he was God's man. I mean, he always said, the world may be saying one thing, and I would rather, I'm with the church, okay, and I'd rather be, even if the church is wrong in its teaching, and I don't think they are, I would rather be wrong with them than right with the ones that are going the other way.
Amazing.
I don't care about being right. I care about being, I don't want to be me. I want to be God. And yeah, that's the way.
What an incredible example for us. Venerable Fulton Sheen, we're all praying for his canonization cause, that he does get to be beatified sometime soon. Perhaps it'll be some years before we see this rightfully happen. But what an incredible example for us, even in our modern day. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dan Cheeley, church historian and expert on Fulton Sheen, your hero, for talking to us about some of your memories and the great memory of Fulton Sheen. Thanks so much for being with us on today's program.
Thanks for the opportunity.
God bless. That was Dan Cheeley talking about Fulton J. Sheen. He and I had plans to go to the beatification together of Fulton Sheen until that was postponed, and maybe we'll be rejoining forces again when that beatification is relaunched. Who knows when that will happen, but something to pray for.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Dan Cheeley, church historian, talking to us about Venerable Fulton Sheen, and Julia Lineberg talking to us about Our Lady of Loretto. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, airing every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up this week, the most visited Marian shrine in the world is at Mexico City, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I am there to investigate how the mysterious image emblazoned on St. Juan Diego's Tilma has inspired millions of believers. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.